The other day, on a walk to town, my curious 10-year-old companion said to me, "What's the name of your best friend?" I thought for a moment, and then I said, "My best friend has a title, not just a name. All my best friends have titles." "What do you mean?" asked a small girl. "Like doctor or professor or lord or lady?" "No, not at all. Like the house at Pooh Corner or Gone with the Wind or A Christmas Carol." "But those are titles of books. They aren't the names of best friends." My small companion was very indignant. "Oh, but they are. Books are my very best friends. I make a habit of reading them all the time. They go with me everywhere." Reading is indeed a habit, an addiction. I can't put a stop to it, nor do I want to. Unlike drugs, it's safe, secure, and satisfying. This habit makes life expand. It crosses countries, cultures, and races. This habit allows the past to communicate and gives me futures to explore. Pull a book out of my bag and I have instant entertainment, intellectual stimulation, and fine company. Reading makes me feel that what I do is worthwhile. It's a habit that improves my life. I learned early, from bedtime reading with a torch under the covers after lights out, just what good pals books were. As a child, every time I left my house, my wise and witty Aunt Het, who until her death was my guide and counsellor, used to say, "Take a book, Sal, because you never know." Later, I wondered whether Aunt Het, who was an equally wise and witty assistant and researcher to several of our most prominent MPs, initially in the House of Commons, later in the House of Lords, whether she gave them the same mantra. Did she say, "Take a book, Dennis. Take a book, Morris. Take a book, Neil, because you never know"? I never did know what it was. I never knew. But I took a book anyway, every time, everywhere. The raciest and most successful place was in a 50s dance hall. As a teenager at an all-girls school, never allowed to hobnob with boys, who remained creatures from another world, going to Friday night mixed dances at London's Hammersmith Palais was a scary experience. The nerve-wracked girls all lined up at one end of the ballroom, shuffling and trying to look pretty. This was the 50s. The boys, equally shy but attempting to be bombastic and super confident, lined up at the other end, pushing and shoving each other and laughing far too loudly. In those days, boys asked girls to dance. Never, absolutely never the other way round. As soon as the first piece of music blared out, the boys began to advance like an army down the room towards the girls, some so shy they were trembling. Girls were picked slowly and with long, hard male glances, one by one. There were always more girls than boys, so inevitably the last six or seven who were not chosen trailed miserably to the side wall where there were wallflower chairs. And the girls, the wallflowers, drooped, eyes cast down as they flopped onto the seats, on view for everyone to see and giggle about. Thank goodness our kids don't have to go through that ritual humiliation. Fortunately, I only went through it once. The second time, I had my sturdy book with me. I didn't even bother to line up with the other girls. I marched straight to the wallflower seats and opened up my novel. So entranced was I in the plot that I didn't notice the smart lineup of boys who had all left their usual positions and come to ask this strange, bizarre creature to dance. Sometimes I did, but sometimes I didn't. Boys had to be very strong contenders once a girl had the reading habit. I can tell you, you'll never be alone with a book.